Thank you. Please be seated. Now for the message, Mr. Robert Nettles.
Happy Sabbath, brethren. What a beautiful day today. Finally, the weather's cooling down. Mornings are down in the 60s, some places even as low as the upper 50s. Beautiful, beautiful. I love it. This last Thursday, I took a few hours off from work, and my wife and I, we did kind of a belated date night for our anniversary. Our anniversary is last Sabbath, and we decided to kind of postpone it and go out on Thursday. We went to a matinee, like old people do, and kind of an early dinner. The movie we saw was Sully, and for those that haven't seen it, it's a good movie, and I'm not afraid of, giving the punchline away on this movie, because we all know everybody was saved. But that movie made me think. As you go through everything that took place and the decisions that were made, the law of average, the physical constraints of landing or crashing a plane on the Hudson River, it's extraordinary. Statistics tell us, or, the experts tell us, that plane should have broken in hundreds of pieces, and there should have been a great loss of life. For those that understand, there was 155 people on the plane. This all happened back on January 15th, I believe it was 2009, and the captain was Sully Sullenberg, and made me think, was this a miracle, or was it just, a perfect situation for this experienced airline captain to land the plane perfectly? And the worst injury that day was one of the flight attendants had a large gash on her ankle, and there were some pretty bad cases of hypothermia, but everyone survived. There was absolute zero loss of life. Was this just good situation, or was this God's hand in play? Did somebody on that plane need a miracle? Did somebody watching the event need a miracle? I want to start off today by reading, it's shortened, but it was an article in the 2008 United News. On Tuesday, February 5th, 2008, tornadoes struck the Mid-South. The hardest-hit state was Tennessee. Most of the deaths occurred in the little town of Lafayette. While they were in it, the home of members Jimmy and Judy Law, some of you may remember reading the story sometime back, Jimmy and Judy Law was completely destroyed. It was flattened. Before the tornado struck, the electricity went off, and Judy was no longer able to follow the progress of the tornado. At about 10:30 p.m., Judy could hear what sounded like heavy rain coming, and then as it came closer, it began to roar. She knew it must be a tornado, so she ran into the bedroom where Jimmy was asleep and yelled, "It's coming!" Jimmy jumped out of bed and said, "What's coming?" It grew louder, and Judy said, "It's here." Jimmy quickly headed toward the kitchen. He felt what he thought was Judy holding his hand. When he got to the kitchen, the roof lifted off the house, and the walls all fell over. Back in the bedroom, Judy had dropped to the floor and grabbed the foot of the bed, hoping it would anchor her in place. Pieces of furniture fell, covering Jimmy and Judy. It didn't crush them, but formed pockets of safety around them. The mattress lifted off the bed, but rather than flying off, it slid over Judy. In the aftermath, Jimmy looked for Judy because he had felt someone's hand holding his when he had left the when he went into the kitchen, but she wasn't with him. They called to each other, and he went back into the bedroom where he found her, uncovered on the bedroom floor. What held Jimmy and Judy down? Why didn't they blow away? Now, these were church members. They both knew that this was God's hand in play. But some might call this, you know, tornadoes do funny things sometimes. You know, it'll go into a neighborhood, and this house is destroyed, but houses right next to it weren't even affected, not even broken window. So was this God's hand in play? Was this a miracle that took place? Was it something that God did to protect his people? What was it? Today we're going to look at the topic of miracles. It's one of my favorite topics. I think if any of us sat down and had dinner together and we got into a conversation, one of my favorite topics is talking about miracles. We all know miracles happen today. You know, it's obvious. They happen in your life. They've happened in my life. It's not the same as what it was back in the Old Testament. You know, God isn't leading us through the wilderness via a pillar of cloud and a pillar of fire. He's not feeding us with manna from heaven. But God does play a part in our life. We're going to explore, kind of take a tour. And I'm not going to read all the book of Exodus. But when you look at the book of Exodus, it has some of the most profound miracles ever described. Things that, wow, this is so obvious. This is a miracle. This is God's hand involved in his people's lives. Why don't we see those same kind of miracles today? Why don't we see God parting the sea? Why don't we see God fighting our battles, crushing our enemy, like he did, you know, in the Old Testament? Why don't we see those things? We're going to cover those questions today. Are we going to answer them? Well, I'll let you answer them for yourself. Well, actually, I'll let the Bible answer a lot of those questions. Let the Bible do it itself. We're going to take a look at, do we see the miracles in our life? Not just the big ones. You know, there are some big miracles that take place. Things that have happened to my wife and I. And, you know, I'll pause right there and, you know, just share a quick story. When we'd been in the church less than a year. Tithing was a new, brand new situation for us. And she was working, I was working. Finances were really, really tight. Tithing was important. We just learned that we need to be tithing to God. You know, when it came to second tithe, oh, wow. No, that was another thing that we had to deal with. But we actually were faced with a decision once. You know, pay our utility bills or tithe to God. What do you do? I mean, this is a biggie. I mean, wow. This was, for us, a huge decision. Well, my wife and I, we talked about it. And again, we were new in the church. We had just been baptized a few months back. A little over 30 years ago. And, okay. So we took a chance. Well, today it wouldn't be a chance. It wouldn't be even a question. But back then, we took a chance. We bit the bullet. And what we did is we put that tithe check. You couldn't send it in automatically like you can today. But, you know, so we put our tithe check in the outgoing mailbox. We had that community mailbox where you put your outgoing mail. And then we opened our personal mailbox. And for those that have been around a while, there was this kind of manila or orangish-looking envelope from the government. We opened it up, and it was a overpaid refund check from the IRS. Okay? And it was about 10 times the amount of the check we just put in the outgoing mailbox. Totally unexpected. But it was about 10 times more than the amount. We both cried. We did. Okay. Well, for all I knew, there was a bunch of orange envelopes in everybody's mailboxes, but that didn't matter to me. Some people, that was a coincidence. Wow, what good timing. You know, no, I prefer to call it a miracle. That was a miracle. And the profound impact that miracle played in my wife's life and my life, that strengthened my faith, my wife's faith. It told us God was there. God is here. And he is involved in our lives. Well, today, that same situation could happen again. Finances could become tight. We would have a decision. Today it wouldn't be a decision. But is God going to be there to put that orange envelope in my mailbox, or as incoming mail? Maybe not. Maybe not. God knows. God knows. Let's turn over, and I'm not going to read all of this. I'm going to start off in the book of Exodus. What we're going to do is we're going to look at some of the profound miracles that God has performed and given us great examples of. The words in the Bible, when you go through miracles, it's a fascinating study. It's really fascinating. The things that God does. Well, when we think about the word miracle, we think of good stuff, right? You know, this is something that's good. Not always. Not always. God doesn't always perform those real positive miracles. No, yes, that's part of it. But God also does things that, wow, pretty incredible. Turn over to, start off in Exodus 4. And I'm going to start reading in verse 1. Now, this isn't the first miracle in the Bible, but this is where things get started. As far as miracles go. Exodus 4, excuse me, just for a second. We'll start reading verse 1. Then Moses answered and said, "But suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose they say, 'The Lord has not appeared to you.' So the Lord said to him, 'What is that in your hand?' He said, 'A rod.' And he said, 'Cast it on the ground.'" This is God speaking. He said, "Cast it on the ground." So he cast it on the ground and it became a serpent. Whoa. I don't know. If I throw a stick on the ground or a rod on the ground, it becomes a snake. He's got my attention. So he cast it on the ground and became a serpent, and Moses fled from it. Yeah, I think I would too. Verse 4, then the Lord said to Moses, "Reach out your hand and take it by the tail." Okay, Moses was pretty brave because he did it. And he reached out his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand. So this rod that became a serpent, the serpent that came, you know, became a rod again. And he reached out his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand. That they may believe that the Lord your God, that the Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Furthermore, this is verse 6, furthermore, the Lord said to him, "Now put your hand on your bosom." And he put his hand on his bosom. And when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous, white as snow. And he said, "Put your hand on your bosom again." And he put his hand on his bosom again. And drew it out and out of his bosom, and behold, it was restored like the other flesh. Wow. Okay, so why did God do this? Why were these miracles performed? You know, the Bible tells us why God does what God does. And sometimes it's not always obvious. Again, this is sort of the crux of the message today. Sometimes it's not obvious why God does what he does. And there's going to be questions that will never be answered in this lifetime, but only when we are part of God's family. And I can't wait to ask him some of these questions. Verse 8, then it will be, if they do not believe you, nor heed the message of your first sign, that they may believe the message of the latter sign. Why did God perform these miracles? So that they would believe. God had to vindicate himself. He had to prove himself. Moses had to prove that he had a relationship with God. This is why those miracles were performed. Let's see how far it went though. Because Moses was a little obstinate as well. We're going to drop down to verse 10. Then Moses said to the Lord, "O Lord, my God, I am not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." So the Lord said to him, "What has made man's mouth?" Well, You know, as was spelled out in the first message, and I want to say I appreciate Mr. Fenwick's message, who has made God, man's mouth? The deaf. Who makes the mute, the deaf, the seen, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with you, your mouth, and teach you what you shall say. Now Moses, he was still, I'm not so sure about this. So that's kind of the first part of Moses' his experience with God and with the miracles that really take place. You know, there are miracles that happened well before this, but this is when we get into kind of the nuts and bolts of things. Those profound miracles of the Old Testament. Why did they happen? Why did they happen? Were they all positive? No, we're going to see here in a moment that, no, they weren't always positive. They weren't always that thing you wanted to see. Well, it depended on what side you were on. Let's just say that. Dropping down to verse 60, just kind of fill in the blanks. We know that Aaron, who could speak, you know, he could communicate well. He sort of became that spokesman for Moses. So he shall be your spokesman to the people, and he himself shall be as a mouth for you, and you shall be to him as God. You're going to be that middleman here. And you shall take this rod in your hand, which you shall do the signs. Well, what's the difference between a miracle, a blessing, a sign? Signs and wonders. We hear this throughout the Word of God. Signs and wonders. If God has his hand in it, it's a miracle. It's something that we cannot perform ourselves. It's something we can't explain, except for one way. That was God's hand involved. We're going to go over, and we're not going to go through all of this. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick tour of the 10 plagues that of Egypt. And this got an entire civilization's attention. But you would have thought, with everything that took place, they would have got to, their attention would have been brought up a little bit quicker than they were. The first plague, and I'm not going to read these. I'm just going to go through and just name them off for you real quick. We are going to go through a couple of them, though. The first plague, the water. Waters became blood. And then, as you go through Exodus, and you start reading of these catastrophic events, and these aren't positive things. If you're an Egyptian at this point in time, you know, when are you going to yield? If you're a Pharaoh, and back in those days, the Pharaohs thought they were gods themselves. So this was a very arrogant individual, but we also know that God hardened the heart of Pharaoh. We can all speculate what that means. But just say that Pharaoh had a very hard head, and it was hard to get his attention. The second plague, frogs. Now, if you think about, I've lived in the Midwest before, where some of the plagues that take place, I would say that we've seen a little bit of it in the Midwest, where frogs come out depending on what season it is, and you'll see frogs all over the road. And for anybody that's driven down a country road and there's these frogs jumping all over the place and you're driving, you're running over them. It's kind of, I don't like it. The third plague, and you know, we see this in the schools here sometimes. Third plague was lice. But this wasn't like, you know, some, you know, outbreak in a school system. This was a full-fledged plague. The fourth plague, flies. Okay, now, still doesn't have Pharaoh's attention. The fifth plague, livestock. And the livestock are dying from diseases. You know, everything you've got, all your meat. I mean, this stuff is, it's dying, and the stench still didn't have his attention. The sixth plague, boils. Okay. Now, I want you to keep in mind as you go through this and you read it for yourselves, the sixth plague boils. Israel didn't have these boils, but Egypt did. This was not good. The seventh plague, hail. The eighth plague, and I'm going to just drop through these, locusts. Now, I do want to touch on the ninth plague. Now, this is one that, wow, when you think about the ninth plague, darkness. I want you to turn over to Exodus 10. Exodus 10, and we're going to start reading in verse 21. Exodus 10, 21. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand towards heaven that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt. Now, pay attention here. Darkness which may even be felt. How dark was it? Darkness that may even be felt. And this is from the New King James Version. Darkness that may even be felt. So Moses stretched out his hand towards heaven, and there was a thick darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days. Verse 23, they did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days. But all the children of Israel, now they were exempt from this, all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. Now, how dark does it have to be for you to feel the darkness? I've been in a dark closet before. I've been in a dark room before. I think all of us have been in pretty dark places you can't quite see. I've never felt the darkness. Now, the 10th plague, at this point, you would think God would have had Pharaoh's attention. Israel is watching all this. Why did God do all these things? These aren't what I call positive miracles. These aren't signs that I would want to be on the losing side of. Let's just say that. Turn over to Exodus 12, and we're going to read verses 29 through 30. Exodus 12, verses 29 through 30. And it came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn of the land of Egypt. The firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the livestock. Okay. Now, hail, locust, boils, darkness. We lost our livestock. Our children are dying. So we're on the Egyptian side now, and God is striking down the firstborn, not just of something, of everybody. Now again, Israel was exempt. Egypt was afflicted. So Pharaoh rose, verse 30, so Pharaoh rose in the night, he, all of his servants, and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. Okay. You've got my attention, God. You've got my attention. And if I am Israel at this point, they know God is fighting their battles. They know that God is there for them. What did Pharaoh do? What did Pharaoh do? Did he say, okay, go? Pretty much. Verse 17, then it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go that God did not lead them by the way of the Philistines, although it was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. What if they become afraid? What if they become afraid? So God knew what was best here. So God's leading them. So God led the people around by the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. And the children of Israel went up in orderly ranks out of the land of Egypt. Now, we've seen some pretty devastating miracles, signs, wonders at this point. So, dropping down to verse 21, and the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and by night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night before the people. Now, I want everybody to stop for a minute and think about this. Is this real? These are stories from the Bible. They're not stories. These are events. This is God. This is the God we worship. This is the God we follow. And he is now leading us by day by a pillar of cloud. We've got God. We've got the essence, the presence of God right in front of us. I don't know about you. He's got my attention at this point. He just took care of the people that were enslaving me. He did some pretty incredible things. I see all this. He's got my attention. You know, anything God says goes. Okay, let's go on with the story. So Exodus 14, and I can go, you don't have to turn there. I'll go ahead and just kind of paraphrase from my notes here. Crossing of the Red Sea. Now, this was another event. Remember, God is leading a very stiff-necked people out of Egypt. In Exodus 14, now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel that they turn and camp before Pi-Haroth, between Migdol and the sea, opposite Baal Zephon. You shall camp before it by the sea. So Pharaoh, now, made ready his chariots and took his people with him. So, let's see, God didn't really get Pharaoh's attention, because Pharaoh says, you know what? No, I'm going to go after these people. I'm not quite done yet. Also, he took 600 choice chariots and all of the chariots of Egypt with captains over every one of them. Okay, so dropping down to verse 10, and when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Okay, Israel still doesn't get it. And again, dropping down, verse 13, and Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. Now, verse 14, the Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. Everything I just saw, this is God's spokesman right here telling me, don't be afraid, chill out, God's here, look what he's already done, just don't be afraid. And the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward, but lift up your rod. Remember the rod? That rod that turned into a snake, that turned back into a rod? Okay, he still got that rod. And stretch your hand over the sea and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on that dry ground through the midst of the sea. Why did God do all these things? Well, it starts off in verse 18. Then the Egyptians shall know. Okay, here's a little clue. The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I have gained honor for myself over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. And dropping down to verse 21. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night and made the sea into dry land and the waters divided. Do we see those kind of miracles today? I haven't seen a sea part. Do we see miracles today? Again, when I started off, we talked about Sully. Was that a miracle? No. Not as profound as a sea being parted. Might have been coincidence. Might have been just good timing and great experience on Sully's part. When I got the check in my mailbox, was that just good timing? Wow, boy, you got lucky. Yeah, we've heard that one before. Or was that God playing a part in our lives? I'm going to drop down to verse 24. Now, it came to pass in the morning watch, the Lord looked down upon the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and cloud, and he troubled the army of the Egyptians. You think he troubled the army of the Egyptians? You know, they just lived through. Keep in mind, what the Egyptians just lived through, the 10 plagues, they witnessed all of this. Now, Pharaoh, he's still got them coming. They're not going to stop. They're not going to stop. Verse 25, he took off their chariot wheels so that they drove them with difficulty. And the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians. Okay, now they're starting to get it. I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to be here anymore. We got to get out of here. Verse 26, then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians on their chariots and on their horsemen. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. And when the morning appeared, the sea returned to its full depths, while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. So the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. God's fighting your battles. This is what God just did. He just destroyed your enemies. This was a profound miracle. Is it a positive miracle? Well, if I was Israel, I'd say, yeah. If I were the Egyptians, yeah, don't know. I think I'd have another opinion on it. Why did God do all these things? In verse 31, it gives us a clue. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. Why did God do these things? Okay, key word, believed the Lord and his servant Moses. He got their attention. He showed them, and wow, you're talking a stiff-necked people. So did it stick? Did it stick? Now let's continue. Did their faith last? Did their belief last? Did, oh yeah, okay, well, anything you say, Moses, anything you say, God, you know, we're on board. Don't think so. Exodus 15, and I'll just kind of paraphrase this. Bitter waters made sweet. I'm thirsty. Exodus 15, I'm just going to read a couple of verses here. Now, when they had come to Marath, they could not drink the waters of Marath, for they were bitter. Therefore, the name of it was called Marah. Verse 24, and the people complained against Moses. Okay, come on, guys. Really? They're malcontents. What shall we drink? So he cried out to the Lord, Moses did. And the Lord showed him a tree. When he had cast it into the waters were made sweet. So, they're still not getting it. They're still whining. They're still complaining. You know, I'm going to speak for myself. Now, if I would have been there, you know, seen all this stuff, boy, I'll tell you right now, God's got my attention. Anything God says goes. Moses, you just tell me what you want me to do. I'm not going to whine. I'm not going to complain. Sure. I think all of us would have done that, right? So let's kind of paraphrase. Let's kind of go back a little bit and see where we've been. We've seen bread. Well, actually, we haven't seen manna from heaven yet. As the story goes on, we see water from a rock. We see bitter water is made sweet. Manna from heaven. Well, what happened? Okay, so I think most of us have read Exodus, and we know that as God was leading Israel through the wilderness, he fed them with manna from heaven. 6 days you will receive, and on Friday you're going to go ahead, the preparation day, you're going to gather twice as much, and he's going to take care of you. Why did he do all these things? Why did he do all these things? Exodus 20 and verse 20. And Moses said to the people, "Do not fear, for God has come to test you, and that his fear or respect, reverence, may be before you, so that you may not sin." Verse 21. So the people stood afar off, but Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. They still didn't get it. They still didn't get it. When God fed them manna from heaven, they whined about it. They complained about it. "It's all we get. It's all we get. We don't get anything." Okay, they wanted meat. God gave them meat. Now, I think God, I'm not going to say this for sure. He kind of had a sense of humor. "You want meat? I'm going to give you meat." And boy, they got it. So we know that there are a lot of other profound miracles that took place in the Old Testament. A lot of miracles. I mean, throughout, we see the ark. We see, you know, the flood. You can go on and on and on about the miracles that took place in the Old Testament. There were profound miracles. These were biggies. You know, what all of us, I think, would define as huge miracles. And it says God did it to get his people's attention, to make them believe. But we all know, at the end of the day, what did they do? Well, you and I would have believed, wouldn't we? But they still worshipped idols. They still built a calf. They still did things that just went against God's grain. Let's move into the New Testament for a minute. Let's move into the New Testament. See what the New Testament. Why did Jesus Christ? Now, this is God manifest physical on earth. This is God in the flesh. Why would he have to perform miracles? Why did he perform miracles? Well, as I was putting this sermon together, I learned that the Bible tells us why he did what he did. And in most instances, it tells us why these miracles were performed. Until I started putting this together, I was really kind of unclear on that. Now, we can all assume when Jesus came to this earth, when he was born, and as he was growing up, you know, he performed, I'm sure, I'm just speculating again, it doesn't say it, that there were more miracles that were performed. But what I want to do now is I want to kind of turn to the first documented miracle of Jesus Christ. And let's go to the book of John, John 2, and starting in verse 6. This is the first documented miracle by Jesus Christ. You know, miracles are an incredible thing. I didn't want to turn this into a word study today and, you know, give all the dictionary definitions for what a miracle is. What is a miracle? Well, a miracle, and you can define it any way you want to. Miracles, signs, and wonders, to a certain degree, they're all the same thing. A blessing. You know, anytime God is involved, God the Father, the God we worship, the one and only God, when he's involved, there is a miracle involved. There's things that we cannot accomplish on our own. This is a miracle. They come in different shapes, different sizes. Why did God perform miracles so big in the past? Well, he had a hard-headed group of people he was dealing with. He needed to get their attention. What about us? The title of the sermon is, Do You Need a Miracle? Do you need a miracle? Do I need a miracle? Is that what it takes? When we become weak in our faith, is that what it takes to put us back on track? Is it a miracle? Yeah, I have no doubt in my mind. There are times in our life, in your life, in my life, where we do need a miracle. God needs to intervene. He needs to turn something around. Do we always receive a miracle when we think we should? No. I would love to be able to get down on my knees. I'm going to stop right there for a second. Share a story with you. When I was a kid, about 6 or 7 years old, I had 3 cousins, and we were all roughly a year apart. And I was a good Baptist. At 6 years old, I was just baptized in the Baptist church. And I remember in Mark 11, a scripture. And boy, I was going to call God on it. I was going to take him for granted for what he told me here. So Mark 11, and I'm going to just one scripture here. Mark 11, verse 24. I guess I better go to Mark 11. Therefore, I say to you, whatever things you ask when you pray, believe that you receive them, and you will have them. Boy, let's see if this works. Hey, cuz, you know, that's basically where I was. You know, we're playing army or soldier in the backyard, as I recall. And, I'd just been baptized not too long back. And I remembered this scripture. Boy, if you ask it, get down on your knees and pray for it, you're going to get. We wanted some guns, man. We wanted to play soldier. We couldn't even find good sticks to do this. So we all got down on our knees. Four cousins about the same age. And I remember, now I don't remember too much about it, truthfully, but I remember praying. Boy, we truly expected when we opened our eyes, there was going to be toys there for us. It didn't quite work out the way we'd hoped. Is that a miracle? Well, when God answers your prayers, and he does answer your prayers, he answers the prayers of a righteous man avail much. He heals people. But wait a minute, he also doesn't heal people. It's interesting. God knows when you need a miracle. God knows when I need a miracle. He's performed miracles, and we've seen miracles in this congregation. For 12 years of my family and I have been here, I've seen so many episodes, events, where God has had his hands in it. We listened to Mr. Fenwick's sermonette, and I really appreciated his sermonette. But did anybody take notice of the last hymn that talked about the words? Really keyed in. Now, wow, coincidental. Boy, they must have planned that or time. No, that's God having his hand in our services. Is that a miracle? Or what is it? What defines a miracle? You notice I didn't give that dictionary definition of a miracle. When God has his hands involved in your life, in my life, in the services that we participate in here today, where he coordinates everything, it's not us. This is God. This is God's day. Sabbath day was created for man, not you and I for it. This is God's day. Let me get started again. First miracle of Jesus Christ, and in John 2, the book of John, chapter 2, and starting in verse 6. Now, I want you to think about this. This is Jesus Christ. This is the first documented miracle Jesus Christ performed in the Bible. Verse 6. Now there were six water pots of stone, according to the manner of purification of the Jews, containing 20 or 30 gallons apiece. Okay, so these are some pretty hefty pots, and there's six of them. You know, some may have 20 gallons, some may have 30 gallons. These are some pretty hefty pots. Verse 7, Jesus said to them, fill the water pots with water, and they filled them up to the brim. Verse 8, and he said to them, draw some out now and take it to the master of the feast. And they took it. Verse 9, when the master of the feast had tasted the water that was made to wine and did not know where it had come from, but the servants who had drawn the water, they knew. The master of the feast called to the bridegroom and said to him, every man at the beginning sets out the good wine, and when the guests have all well drunk, then the inferior. Okay, so they start these events off. Here's all the good stuff. Now, all we got left is the drunks. So here's all the bad stuff. I don't know. I'm just going according to some of the parties I've been to. Not quite. But, you know, basically, when the master drank this, this was the good stuff. This was the top shelf. When Jesus performed this miracle and he turned these six pots of water, some 20, some 30 gallons, he turned it into wine. He just didn't turn it into wine. He turned it into the top shelf. He turned this into the good stuff, right? Now I'm just going to drop down to verse 11. Verse 11, why did Jesus do this? This is the beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifest his glory. This is the key to it right now, and I want you to pay attention. And his disciples believed in him. Why did he perform this miracle? Well, wait a minute. His disciples didn't believe in him before? There was some doubt. There was some doubt. What he's doing at this point in time, he says exactly why he performed this miracle. And his disciples believed in him. Okay, is that what it takes for you and me? We don't see water turned into wine. We don't see the parting of the Red Sea. God's not leading us around through the wilderness with a pillar of fire and a pillar of cloud. The miracles. Why did he perform them? So they would believe in him. God had to vindicate himself. He had to justify himself. He had to prove himself to the disciples as well. Now, I'm just going to touch on a few more stories before we get into one really good one. But a man healed at the pool of Bethesda. Okay? This was another one of the miracles, and this you can find that account in John 5, verses 2 through 9. Do you want to be made well? And this is in verse 6. When Jesus saw him lying there, and he knew that he had already been in the condition a long time, he said to him, do you want to be made well? Now, verse 7 of John 5. The sick man answered him, sir, I have no man to put me in the pool when the water is stirred up. But while I am coming, another step down before me. In verse 8, Jesus said to him, rise up and take your bed and walk. And immediately the man was made well, took up his bed and walked. He's got all kinds of people right there watching this event. This man was in bad shape, in that condition, a long time. It doesn't say exactly how long, but a long time. I'm just going to take it for what it says. That's a long time. And now he's made well. And we know, going through the book of the New Testament, They're the books of the New Testament. Jesus performed during his short ministry, that three or so years of his ministry, that he performed miracle after miracle. Now, one of my favorites is where we're actually going to take a little bit of time, because this one was kind of cool. And let's turn over to John 6, book of John, chapter 6, and we're going to start reading in verse 1. Now, personally, I'd like to think that God the Father and Jesus Christ have a sense of humor. I really would. You know, I mean, that they see things, and sometimes they do things. They've got to be smirking a little bit. I wouldn't say smirking. I'm kind of putting myself in it. But they've, you know, there's a smile on their face or in their minds when they're doing this. John 6 is starting verse 1. After these things, Jesus went over to the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. Verse 2, a great multitude followed him because they saw his signs. His signs. They knew that this guy is doing something, which he performed on those who were diseased. He saw the miracles. They saw the miracles, I should say. They saw him healing people. They saw him taking the profound blind where they can now see, the deaf where they could hear, all kinds of miracles. In verse 3, and Jesus went up to the mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. In verse 4, now the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was near. Then Jesus lifted up his eyes, and seeing a great multitude coming toward him, he said to Philip, where shall we buy bread that they may eat? And kind of tells us what he's going to do here, verse 6. But this he said to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. He already had his plan in place. Jesus knew exactly what he was going to do. Verse 7, Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may have a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there is a lad here who has 5 barley loaves. And 2 small fish. But what are they among so many? Then Jesus said, make the people sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in a number of about, and picture this, 5,000 people. There's, you know, less than 200 of us here. And, you know, we actually look like we got a pretty decent crowd today. 5,000. I mean, this was a pretty huge crowd. I've always loved this event. Verse 11, and Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to the disciples, and the disciples to those sitting down, and likewise of the fish, as much as they wanted. Okay? Now, picture this. How do you do this? They're watching this miracle being performed right in front of their eyes. For me, it's astounding. And verse 12, it gets better. Verse 12, and when they were filled, he said to his disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, so that nothing is lost. Therefore, they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets. Okay, so you remember where he started out with this whole story. Okay, now they filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the barley loaves, which were left over by those who had eaten. Now, why do you do this? Why do you do this? Verse 14, then those men, when they had seen the signs that Jesus did, said, this is truly the prophet who is to come into the world. They believed. This is truly him. This is it. There's verification. There's proof. Do we need a miracle to prove that God is God or Jesus Christ is Jesus Christ? Does God need to validate himself to you and I? Is that what he needs to do? Do we see the intervention, the participation God plays into our lives? Do we have to have that? Well, we're going to get into a few more areas here. I'll just touch on a couple. Lazarus raised from the dead. A man born blind received sight. That was John 9, verses 1 through 12. You can read that for yourselves. And then in the event about Lazarus, that's John 11, verses 38 through 44. But I want to get into something a little bit more profound today. Why did all these miracles have to be performed? Now, you look at the miracles that the world sees, right? Versus the ones that we have seen in our lives, in your lives. We see the likeness of Mother Mary on a slice of bread or a piece of toast. Wow! The miracles of the world, are they the same miracles that you and I see? I don't know about you. Again, I'll share a quick short story about my wife and I. A little over 21 years ago, my wife and I had been married roughly 13 years. And we'd resigned ourselves to the thought that we would never have children. Never have children. 13 years, and we had been trying with no success. Well, you all know my son. Well, you know, again, I think God has a little bit of a sense of humor, because when he was conceived, my wife had been pregnant before, but nothing had ever stuck. And this happened several times. I was pretty much, convinced I was never going to have a child. We were never going to have a child. And I come home, the worst opportune time you can possibly imagine. I'm now going to school, not working, took a sabbatical from work to educate myself. And I came home and I've got a big smile on my face. And my wife informs me she's pregnant. Sure. Okay, so she was pregnant. Been down that road before, but she kept getting bigger. Kept getting bigger. And again, you know my son today. It just was the right timing. Well, you think after 13 years, I don't know how some people look at it. I know I prefer to look at it. God performed a miracle. He gave us the child that we wanted, that we needed. That was a miracle in my life, in our life. Pretty incredible. Another short story. When my wife and I had first come into the church, we're driving down a very icy road in Minnesota. We've got cars, it's traffic, rush hour all over the place. I'm in a car you've all seen, or I think most of you have seen my son's Volkswagen, one almost identical. In fact, it was the same year. And we're driving, and all of a sudden, we hit that icy spot. In Minnesota, roads sometimes are very treacherous with the black ice, and there are cars everywhere, trucks. This is a Volkswagen. Have you seen a Volkswagen when they've been in accidents? They just get crushed. And we started spinning, I think, around three times, completely around in circles, waiting to die. We knew that there was no way to escape this. The car stopped. We're heading in the right direction. We looked around. There was not a vehicle in sight. Wow. How lucky were we that all these cars just decided to speed up and get by us, and now there's not a car in sight. This was rush hour. And all of a sudden, there was nothing around us. Okay, so this was a miracle. Now, everybody's got their own miracles to share. Do we recognize those small ones? The ones that aren't so obvious? Sometimes miracles in our life, God knows exactly when we need them. Sometimes the miracles we're looking for, they don't happen. They don't happen. Not the way we want them to, because we're not the ones to dictate when these miracles are going to take place in our life. God is. God knows what we need before we need it. It's pretty amazing. God knows what we need before we need it. So I'm going to get into a little trend right now. Do we need a miracle? Does God need to prove himself to us? What does God need to do for you and I to make us believe he is there? Okay. 2 Corinthians, and this, I'm going to go through this fairly quick, because there's a theme that I'm going to go through right now to kind of put all this in perspective. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7. For we walk by faith, not by sight. Let's continue that thought. Galatians 3, verses 10 through 11. For as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse, for it is written, cursed is everyone who does not continue in all things which are written in the book of the law, to do them. But that no one is justified by the law in the sight of God is evident. For the just, remember this phrase again, the just shall live by faith. Ezekiel 18 and verse 9. If he has walked in my statutes and kept my judgments faithful, he is just. So that's who the just is. He shall surely live, says the Lord God. Galatians 2 and verse 20. I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith. What is faith? Definition's right there, guys. What is faith? I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. Theme continues. Galatians 3, verse 11. But that no one is justified by the law in the sight of God is evident, for the just shall live by faith. Hebrews 10, verse 38. You can just write these down. Hebrews 10, verse 38. Now the just, remember this again, shall live by faith. But if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. Do we need the same miracles that were performed in the Old Testament? Do we need those big miracles? Do we need to see things? And it's funny because when you go down to John, or go to the book of John, John 4, and I'm just going to read verse 48 for the sake of time here. John 4, verse 48. Then Jesus said to them, unless you people see signs and wonders, you shall by no means believe. Why did Jesus perform those signs, those miracles, those wonders? Because he knew the Spirit of God hadn't been given yet. You and I, brethren, we have the Spirit. When we were baptized, when we were called, our eyes are open. Do you need a miracle? Okay, here's a miracle for you. Have you ever had a conversation with somebody who wasn't called into the church of God, who hadn't had their eyes open? You're reading the same scriptures to them, and especially this time of year, you've got the feast coming up. And I believe it was Mr. Scriber or maybe Mr. Tuck just recently pointed out, these are the festivals of God. Doesn't say the festivals of you and me. Doesn't say the festivals of the Jews. It says these are the festivals of God, and you're invited. I'm invited to them. We can see that so clearly. When it comes to the Sabbath day, when it comes to the laws of clean and unclean meat, the law of tithing, we can see these things so clearly. We can explain it. God says to have an answer. You know, always be prepared. But yet you have a conversation with those of the world, those that weren't called, haven't been called yet. That's a miracle, brethren. That's something that you and I are part of. We're all a part of a miracle. As Mr. Fenwick pointed out, our mouth, our words, that's a miracle. What is a miracle? What is a sign? What is a wonder? What is a blessing? Anything God is involved in, anything God is involved in is good. It's a miracle. And we're part of that. So again, John 4, verse 48, then Jesus said to them, unless you people see signs and wonders, you will by no means believe. Now I want to read a short excerpt from the church's booklet, Does God Exist? Does God Exist? And the topic on this one was, God allows man the choice or to choose. It was not God's idea to remove himself and be seemingly unapproachable. It was mankind's choice. Beginning with Adam and Eve, God gave humankind freedom of choice. He allows us to choose whether we will believe him, accept his knowledge, accept the knowledge he reveals, and obey him or not. God didn't force Adam and Eve to follow his instructions. They freely chose not to. Humanity has felt the repercussions of that fateful decision ever since. Neither did God force ancient Israel to obey him. He clearly offered the Israelites a choice. This day I call heaven and earth as witness against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and cursings. He told them, now choose life so that you and your children may live. With their own ears, they heard God on Mount Sinai. They witnessed miracle after miracle in their trek out of Egypt. Yet the Israelites quickly forgot the evidence and the choice to disregard the way of life and blessings God offered. Yet some of the same people who knew of Christ's miracles later shouted for his blood. They saw the miracles. They knew this was God in the flesh. But what did they do? He was still sacrificed. Jesus pointed out that some were so hardened toward God that they wouldn't accept him and his way, even if someone were raised from the dead. You can find that in Luke 16:31. Now, there's something else. There's something coming here in the future. And we all need to be very, very aware of this. We all need to consider this. Miracles. Wow. You know, they can get somebody's attention real quick. You know, you see something profound. Sometimes the miracles that are performed in your life or in my life aren't necessarily for you. This is an example for somebody else, you know, to see. It's somewhat verification, and it's not that God has to justify himself, prove himself, verify himself, but he does things that, truthfully, at this point, we can't explain. But I also want to read another short excerpt from the church's booklet, Is There Really a Devil? Now we're going to talk about miracles not of God. Because there are things coming in the future that we need to be very aware of. And I know we've all heard these things before. Satan will have a direct hand in the rise of a great leader who will play a pivotal role in a massive end-time religious deception. Writing of events preceding Christ's return, Paul tells us that day will not come unless the falling away comes first. And the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition. This man opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. How could such a person claim to be God and convince others to believe him? Paul adds, the coming of the lawless one will be in accordance with the works of Satan displayed in all kinds of, and listen carefully, counterfeit miracles, signs, and wonders. and in every sort of evil that deceives those who are perishing. These powerful miracles will convince many. We've got to be aware the miracles of God. We've got to be very intuitive, very in tune with God. What is of God and what is not of God? These powerful miracles will convince many, but in reality they are deceptive handiworks of Satan. Regrettably, this man's deception will take in millions of people. Continuing, this should be a sobering warning to all of us. If we do not love the truth, if our beliefs are not firmly grounded in the truth of God's word, and we do not have the strength of character to hold fast to them, we could easily fall prey to this or other satanic deceptions. It's happened before, and both Jesus and Paul assure us it will happen again. We've got to be aware. We've got to be aware of the little miracles God performs in our life. We've got to thank Him. Do we see the intervention? Do we see His hand in our life? Do we give Him the credit for things that take place? Or do we take credit to ourselves? One more quick excerpt, and this was an article posted by Don Hoosier, or posted on the church's website, Miracle of Miracles, posted on March 23rd, 2011. Many miracles are not overtly conspicuous, spectacular, or even immediately apparent. Seldom are the fireworks that made a miracle obvious to it all, to us all. God usually chooses to work invisibly and quietly behind the scenes, steering events to bring about the results He predetermines, often in surprising ways. Anytime God intervenes in our affairs, in the affairs of men, even when He is working within His laws, we call it miraculous or providential. However, miracle of miracles, in spite of the Bible's greatest diversity, there is perfect unity. It is consistent and coherent all the way through. You know, again, if we want to see a miracle in our lives, if we need a miracle, I don't know about you, brethren. Do we see God's hand in our life? Do we see His intervention? Do we see the little things He does? Sometimes we call them coincidental. Good timing, circumstance. Get down on your knees. Pray to God. When He answers your prayers, that's a miracle. That's a miracle. When we can see His hand correcting a situation that may not be the best situation. You know, I don't know about you. I'm going to speak strictly for myself. I've seen brethren in the church where financial ruin has hit them. Things have just not gone their way. God must have abandoned them. And they're no longer with God's church. Things happen. They call it life. God intervenes. He corrects situations. He'll, in my opinion, and again, this is Robert's opinion, when He has touched my life and put yellow envelopes or manila envelopes with a refund check after I've just paid my tithe, that's a miracle. I'm going to get down on my knees. I'm going to thank God. I recognize that as a miracle. When God gives us a son, I see that as a miracle, not just, wow, it's finally our time. 13 years? I don't know. We see the small miracles in our life, the small ones, not just the big ones. Are we looking for the big miracles? If we are, we might get deceived. Brethren, do you need a miracle? I don't. God wants us all to have faith. God wants us all to focus strictly on Him. We shouldn't need a miracle. God knows when we do. Have a great Sabbath.